mixed reaction, I would say, on the text to Red Zone adding commercials for the upcoming season. I remember when YouTube was ad-free, LOL, people are still on it, so we'll be fine. And I am one of those.
It is. You know what, though? Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you got on me about this. So you and I had to watch a YouTube of something, and I pulled it up on my YouTube, and an ad pulls up, and you're like, you're one of these people that's still doing the free YouTube thing.
I have YouTube Premium. Yeah. I have YouTube Premium, and it's a, boy, it's a difference, man. You know what? I 100% get it. Okay, I'm on board with everybody that's really upset about this for Red Zone. Because sometimes I'll click on something on my phone, and it's a YouTube link, but it doesn't go into the app, and an ad pops up, and I am the angriest person who ever lived.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? What is this commercial nonsense in the middle of my content?
Yeah. It's funny too. And Netflix, I pay for the premium Netflix subscription, which I guess because Monday Night Raw is on Netflix now on Monday nights. And I realized like two or three episodes into watching it, they would be looking like they're going to break, and then they would come back 1 second later and it would still be on. And then they would act like they're coming back from a break 3 minutes later. I'm like, oh, that's right. Part of why I'm paying this is they're, I get to watch the matches through the breaks now.
The brutal thing is on some of the streaming services, if you don't pay for the ads free, it's that you can't fast forward through the ads free.
That's right.
What MLB used to do that on the extra innings, and it would drive me insane. And actually, I don't know, maybe they still do it, but you can't fast forward. So you're like, I want to watch the fifth inning of a game. So you go back, and you're sitting there like, I gotta sit through 3 minutes of commercials on this service that I pay for so I can watch one specific inning of the game? You bastards.
Read the fine print, Seth. I'm sure it's legal. Yeah. Whatever it is that they're doing, I'm sure it's legal.
They don't do it on MLB.com. I always lose track of which one. I went through and did a clean flush of a lot of the services that I don't use as much. So I get it. And you know what? I'm glad that texter brought that up because now I get why people that watch Red Zone a lot are probably peeved about this.
Yep. We're getting a lot of texts. We'll read some of them here, but let's see what the experts think of the Houston Texans. First time this year, we power rank the power rankings, and I've got five of them here. Not all the outlets are putting together preseason power rankings, so I had to go find five of them. We usually like to do four.
Cowards.
Or five. Yeah, we usually like to do four or five of these. So this is our first one. We start at number five, Scott Pianowski of Yahoo, who I had to do a double take. Look, I know not everybody's on the Texans bandwagon this year. I get it that you're skeptical about the offense. Are you telling me the way to fix an offensive line is to trade away your best offensive lineman? I understand the narrative. I understand all of that if you're not in Houston watching this team on a daily basis. But 19th in the power rankings, Seth. This Scott Pianowski character, here's what he says. Nico Collins is an uncoverable god, and C.J. Stroud is more than good enough if the Texans can cobble together some semblance of pass protection. The backfield has a lot of candidates, but perhaps no real right answer. All of these things may be true, but not even a sentence about the elite-level defense they're going to put out there, Scott.
This guy's a honk for the NFC, I'm convinced of it. He has the Lions number one overall, and then he has all of these NFC would-be contenders. That he doesn't recognize the supremacy of the AFC at this point and their quarter. He's got the Falcons ninth. He's got the Bears 12th. At the very least, he put the Chargers 18th. All right, he's not high on the Chargers either, but the team that the Texans destroyed in the playoffs last year, could you at least have the Texans 18th and then the Chargers 19th?
That's a great point. I would bet that the Chargers ahead of the Texans in at least three, if not four, of these power rankings that we've got here. And probably this one, Connor Orr. Number four is Connor Orr of SI.com, and he's got the Texans 16th. Barely in the upper half of the league, 16th, says this: my excitement level at being absolutely proved wrong and humiliated by C.J. Stroud is high, very high. For the better part of 6 months, I've been downplaying the Texans as much as one can without supplanting the team in my predictions with the Colts. Nothing in GM Nick Caserio's recent past has suggested poor drafting ability. Yet, here I am wondering if a new offense run by the great Nick Caley and two receivers taken in the first three rounds of the draft won't be impactful? Clown stuff, bro.
Clown stuff, bro. Yeah. Oh, he's calling himself a potential clown.
Yeah, he wants the Texans to be higher than 16.
He wants them to be, and he's saying he's doing that little thing, though, where how do they eliminate you on The Bachelor, Sean? What do? They give you a black rose or something?
No, you just don't get picked.
Yeah, so you just don't get a rose?
You just don't get a rose. Yeah, yeah.
So this is like The Bachelorette saying some really nice things about a guy that's not going to get
a
rose.
You get a hug.
Right?
You get a hug on the way out. Yeah.
You get a hug. So this is a hug.
A hug and some kind words. Yeah.
It's not you. It's me. Okay. Whatever, Connor Orr.
It's what this is.
As soon as he said that nothing in Nick Caserio's recent past has suggested poor drafting ability, I know a huge portion of our audience said, wait a second, offensive line.
Yeah.
Offensive line, you bastard, Connor Orr.
Yep.
So that's probably the thing that isn't a story outside of Houston and wouldn't be expected to be, but people's concern over Caserio's drafting of offensive linemen, that's a big one. And Ariante Ursary could offset that a little bit.
Definitely. Definitely. All right, so Connor Orr, number four on the power ranking of the power rankings, our first one of the season. Number three. Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com, who gives real in-depth, deep analysis on all 32 teams. Maybe one sentence for each one. Here's what he says about the...
He didn't do any... okay, go ahead.
Here's what he says about the 15th-ranked Houston Texans. 15th, he's got them. So we got a 19, a 16, and now a 15. The entire season might hinge on the offensive line. That unit was bad last year, but changes were made. The question is this... Is the unity any better?
The unity?
The unity.
Oh, about to get punched in the forehead with a unity ring.
How's that grab you, Seth Payne? Huh?
Oh, is the unity any better? Yes, I believe that the unity is better. Mm-hmm. That's a word you don't...
Unity.
Just to throw out unity there without any clarification almost makes it sound like he might be talking about the reports of the near toxic environment in the offensive line room.
I hadn't thought about that. I was just thinking of the five... working together out on the field. But unity feels like something.
Yeah, he specifically says the offensive line. Yeah, I'm an idiot. When I was looking at my phone there, the blurb didn't show up, so I didn't see. So I got it pulled up.
But I was confusing unity with cohesion. Like, cohesion is how you play. Unity is off the field stuff, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I think it's a good point. Now, granted, it's the only point that he makes, but
I'm going to grade that power ranking down because on my phone, his blurbs didn't show up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just the power ranking.
I thought that's why I wrote Pete is lazy underneath in the show prep.
Well,
because I thought he didn't do any write-ups for any of them. I'm looking at him like, what the hell, Pete? You can't just do a sentence or two?
His write-ups are way shorter than everybody else's that we do.
Yeah, but I thought he hadn't written anything at all.
Zero, so. Huh? Okay, gotcha.
Kudos to you, Pete.
Good job, Pete. Way to get a couple sentences in on each team. All right, number two, power rankings of the power rankings. Eric Edholm, NFL.com, has the Texans 13th and says this, in some respects, Houston flatlined last season, going from the darling team everyone loved to just another also-ran contender in the loaded AFC. What will it take to break out in 2025? Doing so will likely mean the offensive line has improved, the receivers are more reliable/explosive, and the defense has taken another step toward being one of the best units in football. That's not to say C.J. Stroud doesn't have room for improvement, too. He seemed to plateau in 2024. Having a better surrounding cast should help, and Stroud's strong showing in the two playoff games. And we should point that out. I thought he was good in that Chiefs game, even in a loss. I thought he made a lot of good throws in that game. He was excellent in the Charger game.
Well, and he was doing it against a really good secondary without a great group of wide receivers.
Yeah, on the road in the cold weather. That makes him feel good about his progression. I'm a tad leery of the Texans' ceiling, but I do believe they have a chance to move up this list.
You know, it's interesting that CJ does. He hasn't been saddled with that yet. Nobody has claimed that CJ just can't get it done in the playoffs or anything because he's had some really good playoff performances. Mm-hmm. So. The Ravens, obviously, he didn't have a great performance in the Ravens game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But he's performed well in the playoffs. Of all the things where people have had questions about just what his ceiling is or what have you this offseason, I haven't seen anybody, I haven't seen it a single time, I think, question whether he has what it takes to make it in the playoffs.
Yep.
Which is a really good sign.
It is.
This is when, like, Justin Herbert, people are questioning, like, okay, you've only had a couple playoff experiences and you've been trashing both of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if Justin Herbert has the right stuff to be good in the playoffs.
I agree. Yeah, there's only a handful of first-time head coaches and first-time, you know, rookie, you know, first two-year quarterbacks that have won a playoff game in their first 2 years together. And D'Amico Ryans and CJ, I mean, the list is, you can count on one hand what the list looks like. And CJ and D'Amico are one of those duos. Last one, it's begrudgingly as we do this, but he's the only one to put the Texans in the top 10, which is the criteria here in the power ranking of the power rankings. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Seth has the Texans 10th overall on his list. Now, his analysis is even lazier than Pete Prisco's. He barely has a phrase for each team. He says this about the Texans. Not having Joe Mixon will hurt unless Nick Chubb can rewind the clock to pre-2023.
Yeah, now what I would say there is he doesn't need to rewind it to pre-2023 when he had the really bad knee injury. If he can get somewhere close to where he was pre-2023, that would be awesome. Right now, I want him to be serviceable, strong, falling forward, breaking a tackle or two, just churning out steady yardage. Anything on top of that, if and when Joe Mixon returns, I mean, we just have no idea about that. But that'll be an improvement and help compared to what we had last year.
Yeah.
So I'm not being greedy and asking him to be peak Nick Chubb. I just need him to be a guy with really good vision, really good strength, that can consistently get positive yardage.
If he is 2019 Carlos Hyde, that contract is a massive victory for the Texans.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one.
Carlos Hyde wasn't a great running back, but he had his moments as the Texans. He ran for over 1,000 yards that season. I mean, if Nick Chubb is a 1,000-yard rusher, I know 1,000 isn't what it used to be, especially with 17 games. If Nick Chubb gives you 1,000 yards this season, 1 year, $2.5 million, well, it's probably more than $2.5 million with incentives, but you know what I mean. A one-year prove-it deal for Nick Chubb, because I feel like if he rushes for 1,000 yards for you, it probably means you've run the football pretty well this year, because he ain't getting the Joe Mixon level of usage that Joe got last year. Like, if Nick Chubb's getting you a 1,000 yards, it's probably on like 220 carries or something like that.
It's tough. I feel bad for Nick Chubb just in this regard, that I even hesitate to call it a prove-it contract. Because he turns 30 years old this year.
Yeah.
He's going to be a 31-year-old running back next year. Is coming off of that major knee injury from a couple years ago. Financially, I don't know how much of a prove-it deal it can be. I think Nick Chubb, at least a big part of it, is he genuinely wants to win. Yeah. He could have had probably – a lot of athletes, I'm skeptical when they say that they could have gotten more money elsewhere. I think there probably was a lesser team out there that was going to offer him a $5 million, 1 year $5 million or something like that. And Chubb probably sees the writing on the wall and is like, hey, I just want to get back to where I was, and B, I want to do it on a good team.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I mean, he comes into a situation where Joe Mixon was clearly the number one guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe he knew a little bit more about Joe Mixon's injury situation when he signed the deal. But yeah, the prove it deal just doesn't, it doesn't feel like a genuine prove it deal for a 30-year-old running back.
Yeah. Man, I'm rooting for Nick Chubb this year. I mean, he's a Texan, so I'm kind of being redundant, but like it would be really cool considering the injuries, a second major knee injury in his career. He suffered one at Georgia. And then obviously came back fine from that, but then the knee injury 2 years ago and the foot injury last year. Seems like his teammates have really taken to him. That would be really cool to see. Text message, as a red zone enjoyer, the most depressing part of the change, I'm tired of being beaten over the head with ads. It was the one sanctuary where I could have something I love, football, without there being hundreds of ads. I hate the change. Yeah. It was a safe haven for those of you that don't like advertising. I will say that. Seven straight hours of something that you like. But this is the world we live in, man. You know, these are... We ain't going to get more salary cap space if we're not creating more revenue streams, you know? It's how we're going to keep CJ Stroud.
And that sounds like, hey, we're not going to get more inflation. It's like saying, hey, we'll have a higher salary cap. What's that mean? That means that everybody's going to spend more money and we're just right back to where we started. It doesn't mean a damn thing. Your salary's going up 10%. How much is inflation? 10%.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Giddy up. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday.
I'm going to go back to a gold standard in salary cap. I don't want inflation anymore. I just want there to be a hard number. Create some kind of a widget where every team's got 100 widgets, and that's how much you're allowed to spend on players that year. Yeah, however it translates into money, whatever.
That's right. All right, big win by the Astros last night. We'll circle back to that. And Joe Espada explained everything that went on in Frambergate a couple of days ago. What kind of job do we think the Astros manager did of handling this whole thing? We will discuss that coming up next. I feel like Forrest Gump. Ice cream, Lieutenant Dan. Ice cream, Bluebell. Seth Bluebell brought up the brand new flavor. Unveiled it today. Pecan pie. Delicious.
What is it, pecan pie?
Pecan pie. Mm-hmm. Very tasty. Very tasty. It is described as a rich brown sugar ice cream with roasted pecans and pieces of flaky pie crust mixed in with a pecan pie filling. It is outstanding.
So it's different than maple pecan or whatever the normal. What's the normal pecan ice cream?
Butter pecan.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, butter pecan. Yeah, it's different because it's got
actual little pie crust.
Little pie crust in there. Little pecan pie filling. Very, very good. Thumbs up. I'm guessing it's in the stores maybe today where you can get. We got a ton of it up here at the station. So thumbs up to Bluebell blessing us with the pecan pie ice cream. Very, very tasty. Thank you. Here was Joe Espada yesterday. This is before the game yesterday, before the 8-7 win over the New York Yankees. Joe Espada explaining everything that went on with Frambergate, with the what the Astros are calling a miscommunication between Framber Valdez and catcher Cesar Salazar in the Yankee game on Tuesday night. A lot of conjecture, speculation that it was intentional, that Framber meant to throw the pitch that the catcher didn't call. A lot of people saying that. Here was Joe Espada explaining what went on when he called the two of them into his office after the game.
So yesterday I obviously met with Salazar and Valdez. Once I finished talking to you post game, and I really wanted to get down to number one was the asking him to step off. I wanted to know about the thought process, what, you know, which pitch, who was calling which pitch and what. And I wanted to hear from both of them at the same time. I wanted to have a conversation face to face because I wanted to hear the truth about the whole entire thing that happened in that inning. I have a lot of respect for both players. And I truly believe that when we have these conversations, that they're honest, and I want them to tell me the truth, and I want them to tell you guys the truth once they, you know, talk to the media. So I don't want to get into specifics, but I do want to say that I want to put this behind us. There's a lot of speculations and stuff that is being sent on the media, which I don't read, but they make me, you know, people tell me what's going on, and I don't like it. A lot of that stuff is not true, but I understand the environment and the what comes with it, right? So I appreciate if we can just get past this and go back to, you know, baseball.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Listen.
What do you think?
The thing about that is that regardless of what actually happened, by virtue of him insisting on having a meeting where both parties were present and one guy couldn't say something that the other guy might object to, whatever.
And we're going to get to the bottom of this.
We're going to get to the bottom of this, which turned out to be nothing at all. We do this after every game. Usually I... whenever there's any kind of a miscommunication or something, we bring him into... Well, two outfielders collide. Do you bring him into the office afterwards so you can be sure everybody's telling the truth about what they saw?
I want to get to the bottom.
What exactly happened?
Whether Yordan meant to run over Jeremy Pena last year. Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing is so damn weird. And Framber is at the center of something that's really, really weird in a year where he's looked more increasingly like the erratic version of himself. We'll never know exactly whether whether it was just simply not hearing it. This whole thing, I think people have already, in this very short span of time, people are so fixated on the actual beaning or accidental cross-up or whatever it was, that they've almost forgotten that Fromber ignored Salazar
two pitches ago.
Like almost being left out of the conversation. That in and of itself, that alone would have merited a conversation with the manager after the game.
Yes.
So it's not just an isolated, hey, Fromber threw a sinker when Salazar was asking for a curveball or thought he was asking for a curveball. It's the facial expressions afterwards. And it's the fact that Salazar tried to get him to step off the mound on a grand slam pitch the two pitches before.
That is the one pass I wanted to give to Joe Espada in listening to that cut at the beginning. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. He had multiple things he needed to get to the bottom of with these two guys. Because he even said in his post-game press conference, because he didn't talk to those two guys till after he met with the media. Espada went met with the media, then came back to the clubhouse and pulled those two guys into his office, was the sequence of how things went on. And if you recall, there was a cut from Espada after that game when he was asked about not the mix-up on the pitch, but the home run, the grand slam, where Fromber waved off Cesar Salazar. Espada was sitting in his press conference saying, I haven't talked to anybody, but I had a couple of the coaches come up in the dugout and say something about it. I haven't seen it. I haven't had a chance to talk to the guys yet. So he had multiple things he had to hash out. I thought he came out firing in that thing. Like the first 15 or 20 seconds, I'm like, okay, we're going to get some stuff here. And then by the end, he's blaming the media. There's false reports out there. He's not specifying which false reports. He's mealy-mouthing by the end of it. I was so disappointed with how that thing ended. And by the end, I'm like, you might have made it worse. Because there's no clarity on anything at the end of this.
Like when you say something's out there and you're including social media in it, at any given point, somebody probably said something about how those two were responsible for the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
It's social media.
Yeah.
So saying there's false stuff on social media is almost like saying social media exists.
Yeah.
You know that's out there. So I don't know if he said social media or not, but he said the...
No, he said false reports.
False reports, whatever it might be.
Yeah,
I think because that's the... You can't say definitively what happened. Yeah. You can talk about what it looks like happened. So, yeah, I can't say definitively that Fromber ignored the call and threw whichever pitch he wanted to pitch. But I know that however that whole sequence of events went, from the moment that Salazar was trying to get Fromber to hold up the operation... until two pitches later, there had been a grand slam and Salazar had been hit in the chest with a sinker when he was expecting a curve.
Right.
And there's something there.
Yeah.
Don't try to tell me that there's nothing to that. And the report from Michael Schwab that players confronted Fromber in the clubhouse.
Yeah, that it was testy in there. It was contentious in the clubhouse. Yeah, no doubt. This is what I would boil it down to. Because I believe there is a scenario where... asking if Fromber meant to damage Cesar Salazar and asking if he was just trying to make a point or expressing anger by ignoring another pitch are two different questions. Because the answer to the, was he trying to do something to Salazar? The answer to that can be no. While the answer to, was it intentional what he did in ignoring a pitch call? That can be yes. Those two worlds exist.
You can be in the heat of the moment and pissed off and you do something. It's like when you shove somebody.
Yeah.
You're angry, you shove somebody. You don't mean for them to fall down the stairs and break their neck.
That's exactly right.
You know, you're not thinking that in the moment.
That's exactly right.
Did you ask them to stand at the top of the stairs? Perhaps.
Right.
But that's all speculative, Your Honor. Yeah.
But if... Sounds very specific. If the question is, was there intent on Fromber's part, and your stance on this is no, then I would say, okay, you tell me who's got the bigger burden of proof on them. Somebody arguing that Fromber didn't intend to do that. It was truly just a mix-up, he was looking for a curve and I threw a sinker. Oh, oops, sorry. Or was there some anger and intent with Fromber? I'm gonna make a point here and throw another pitch. Or I'm just angry and I'm going to do it. You tell me who the burden of proof is on. The person that is backing Fromber in this, that there was no intent? Or the person that points out that Fromber has been a head case for the last 6 weeks, both with baseball things and off-field things, that he's not backing up bases, that he's leading the league in pitch clock violations, that he's waving off his catcher and giving up grand slams, that numerous times this in the last month that he's questioning the positions of outfielders in games that he loses because the ball gets hit to a certain part of the outfield. Commenting about he's not getting any rest between innings because the offense is so bad. He's made those comments. Comments on the very play where he wasn't backing up home plate. He takes accountability for it while pointing out all the other things that happened on these plays that he can't control. You tell me what the more likely scenario is with a player whose recent rap sheet has all of those things on it.
Right, it's that Fromber lost his mind momentarily, or at least over the course of four straight sinkers. Fromber's in that state of mind where he would have thrown a sinker every single pitch for the rest of the night almost. Like where you're just like, you know, when you get belligerent, when a kid gets hit with detention and he's like, fine, no, give me more.
Yeah.
Give me more.
Yeah.
10 nights of detention.
Breakfast
fine.
Club.
Give me more. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, look, we're talking about a player.
You're Judd Nelson.
We're talking about a player that we've talked about having a good version and a bad version of him for 5 years now. Who showed up, good Fromber or bad Fromber? Like that. This is woven into the Fromber experience. Now, he settled it down nice for a couple of years there, but for whatever reason, he's off the reservation now, man. Like he is doing things. If this were the real world, you'd look at this guy saying he's trying to get fired from his job. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, or he's definitely trying not to get invited back in free agency or something, which is very self-sabotaging because you should be putting your best foot forward. And going so remember look when you look at Correa in his final year, he was the picture of leadership and everything.
He was
very conspicuously so.
Yeah.
He was going out and mound visits and pep talks and everything else. Look at what a great leader he is in his free agency year.
Yep.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, man. It's marketing. Have y'all mentioned Eric Geddy, LOL? Now why are you putting an LOL after that? There's nothing funny about Spencer Eric Geddy going on the injured list for 15 days with some sort of elbow inflammation on his throwing arm. That's not funny at all.
I've gotten so numb inside when it comes to the Astros injury report. I think I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm like Nick Saban stepping over the injured player.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, we got a job to do. Yep, there's going to be injuries along the way.
Yeah,
okay, cool. Talk to me in 15 days and we'll find out about Spencer Arrigan.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Astros back at it tonight with the Yankees. Try to win a series tonight. 6:40 first pitch for the Astros tonight. Speaking of 6:40, I believe shortly thereafter is when we officially get regular season football, baby.
Amazon, baby.
Yeah, Amazon.
I'm going to watch some football.
It's NBC tonight. NBC.
It's
gets,
NBC?
It's NBC.
Oh.
Yep, NBC gets
what's
the opener.
Tomorrow? What's it going to be on tomorrow? Oh, tomorrow night's YouTube.
Yes.
Not YouTube TV, but just YouTube,
In Brazil.
They're going to stream it. They're going to stream the game on YouTube. So whether you have, it doesn't matter whether you have YouTube TV or not, you can watch the game on YouTube.
Yeah, and that's the Chargers and the Chiefs, right?
Yeah.
Chargers and the Chiefs in Sao Paulo.
Big thing about that they're excited about is that because the worldwide audience is going to be able to see football, American football, without any hiccups or anything compared to, you don't have to pay for a streaming service or anything. Yeah, yeah. I say without any hiccups, without having to pay for it.
Yeah. That's if we learned anything about the streaming services, there might be a hiccup or two. So we'll see.
I think YouTube, is this the first game that's been on YouTube, the social media channel?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
I mean, obviously it's on YouTube TV already, but this is right there on YouTube.
Yeah. So that'll be tomorrow. Tonight, Dallas at Philly. Okay, will Jerry Jones' prophecy about his Michaelis Cowboys, will it come true tonight? That will be up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Question on the text page. So the next time the Chargers and Chiefs play, who gets the home game? The Chiefs. The Chargers are getting one of their home games. They'll have eight games at SoFi, and then this would have been their ninth home game. It's going to be played in Brazil. They ain't taking a home game away from the Kansas City Chiefs.
That is the one area where there's been a little bit of creep in for conspiracy theories about the league helping teams out with the schedule, in that because you have that extra game now, it's not all completely predetermined. It still is, other than I think just the one game that they can kind of figure out who the home game, who the away game is. Yeah.
No, it's formulaic. It goes back and
Yeah. It's, okay.
Okay. Yeah, no.
There's one little. There's
sorry,
one little
I thought,
hitch.
I thought I. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is still. It's there's one little hitch, and I don't have it. I assume that you would know it, but there's one little hitch that's actually the league has discretion on it, but it's not.
Okay, I don't know it then.
It's not
yeah.
a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, got it. Okay.
That's the kind of thing I throw out there, assuming that you know the actual rule, but without, yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Because Bill Simmons, like an idiot, said something about how he thought that the league was helping out one team. I don't know if it was the Chiefs or the Bills or something with their schedule. And everybody rushed in and were like, you idiot, it's all predetermined. And there was one smart person who was like, well, actually, there is one little glitch or the league has some discretion on with the international games.
Oh, the
stuff,
international so. Game. Yeah, I just yeah. know that like the AFC has 9 games this year, the NFC has 9 games next year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. By and large it's the way yeah. it's always been except for a couple little wrinkles where the league can actually make
Yeah, no, the point so. Is I do everything in my power to avoid Bill Simmons. So there yeah, you go. Yeah. yeah. All right, so the NFL season does kick off tonight and it is in Philadelphia and it's the Cowboys and the Eagles. Here was Jerry Jones earlier this week. The Cowboys made a big move over the weekend. They traded Micah Parsons to the Green Bay Packers. They no longer have Micah Parsons. In the eyes of Jerry Jones, this makes the Cowboys a better football team.
Decided that it was in the best interest of our team to take the consideration that we have. We appreciate his 4 years. But we can take that consideration and we can win in our minds more than had we gone the other route and signed. That's not a negative on Micah. That's just unique to our circumstances.
Okay. So the, you know, hey, no more Micah, but no $47 million a year contract on the books either for Jerry Jones. So what do we think we see tonight, Seth, with the first game of the post-Micah Parsons era for the Dallas Cowboys?
I think they're going to get destroyed. I think that this is all just such bad juju with the Cowboys because it's everything that former players like Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin have pointed to for years as being making it so difficult to really capitalize on your talent in Dallas. It's that it's a constant circus always, and that this is something that filtered over into preseason and now into the regular season where you made a move for the long haul, basically punting on getting future draft capital for something you can't help at all. They've tried to put their spin on it and say that, oh no, he was actually unpopular in the locker room, this, that, the other. Like all of that is just it's the most extreme example of Jerry Jones making it all about him and the money more so than actually winning football games.
Yeah.
And I don't think Brian Schottenheimer, a guy who is hired to be the latest do boy for Jerry Jones, a guy that's not going to push back or anything, is going to be the guy that's going to be able to shut out all the noise and create an environment where, yeah, we're going to go in and it's us against the world.
Yep, yep. Jerry Jones got to do a little media tour after the trade, too. Remember, he was doing all the rounds before the trade?
Yeah.
He got to do the one we played. That was, I believe, at his press conference. He was on Good Morning America yesterday talking about the Micah Parsons. I guarantee you Jerry Jones looks at the aftermath of that trade and all the media he gets to do. Like, there would have been no media if they just signed Micah Parsons to an extension.
Right.
Know? Now he gets to go around.
No. I 100% think that if somebody in the organization said to Jerry, you know, we probably could have gotten more draft capital and a better deal if we had traded him before the draft, and then we could have also used that for now, he probably, with a straight face, would have said, yeah, but we would have missed out on 4 months of media hoopla.
Yeah,
what are
yeah.
you talking about?
100%.
Why would I ever do that when we could have had all this media hoopla?
Here was Jerry saying yesterday, he's all about the numbers.
We have two kinds of capital or currency in the NFL. One of them is draft picks, and the other is the financial, because every team is limited to the same amount of resources to spend. And having said that, Micah enabled us to have 4, possibly as many as 6 players for the future. That's a good trade when you need numbers. I'll take the numbers every time.
Okay, he's just...
I'll take the numbers every time.
He's just throwing numbers around. Under what scenario do you find 6 players that are as impact? I mean, unless you hit on all these draft picks.
Right.
Like, for him to just go, six players. I'll take the 6. Micah's one guy. I get 6 guys. They got 2 draft picks, and they got $47 million worth of cap space that they can go spend, but they've but you've got to replace Micah Parsons.
I think he's looking at all the cap space and thinking that the amount of money you spend on that versus the average player at each, like all of that, that you can have better depth, a more well-rounded roster.
Great.
So the problem is that he's acting like this is the way he planned for it to go all the time.
Right.
Because he was willing to spend good money to keep Micah Parsons around. It wasn't like now he's been trying to act afterwards, like, yeah, after telling everybody all day long that, like, oh, no, this is all just negotiate, whatever, it's going to be just fine. Now all of a sudden it's, oh, yeah, of course this is what we're doing because it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
He'll never admit that he just got to the desperation moment and the panic moment where he had to trade him away at the end.
Okay, someone's saying, I'm not understanding where Jerry is getting this 4 to 6 players. Then they only get 2 picks. Okay, there's 2 things going on here. One, Jerry might think they got 4 picks for all we know.
That's
Jerry
a good point.
Jerry's a whack job. But let's pretend that he's not a whack job for a second. You can turn those picks into multiple players. You know, you can trade back and you can get picks and things. Like, and I think he is also factoring in, to Seth's point, the $47 million, as opposed to giving it to one guy. Look, they took took 23-ish of that 47 and immediately gave it to Deron Bland, the cornerback, the next day afterwards.
Yeah.
You know?
If you've got, you know, 6 guys making an average of $8 million per year, then, or so, what's his contract per year?
47.
Yeah. So if you got 6 guys making $8 million per year, so he's saying that that's money that can be allocated to those guys.
Yep.
Which is, it's him acting like that's what he was planning on doing it all the time, where you have to call BS on it.
Yeah.
Because Jerry loves his superstars, and he very rarely lets his superstars in their prime leave the building.
Mm-hmm. It's probably fortuitous for Jerry that documentary came out when it did, and it was so heavily focused on the Herschel Walker trade, because now he can use that to defend any moves he's making where he starts to stockpile things. Like, hey, back in the day, you know, Herschel Walker was like the Micah Parsons of that era, and we traded him, and built a championship team.
He did. He invoked Herschel Walker at least once. I don't know. They're so sick of hearing him talk about the 90s now that the worst bootlicker in all of this was Peter Schrager, who I was trying as hell to paint this is the advantage of having an owner who's the GM. He can think about the long term. Like, bro, the guy, the GM, he's the only GM in the NFL who's had a job for 30 years without going to a conference championship game.
Yeah.
Are you honestly telling me you're trying to paint this like the owner / GM scenario in Dallas is actually something to be pointed to as a positive?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about?
Yep. Bootlicker. I like that. Bootlicker. Peter Schrager. Bootlicker and kind of a little creepy when he thought about the Texans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been out on Schrager ever since then. Like, since, stay away from my, why are you looking at my child? Get the hell out of here. Sitting by yourself at the playground? I'm looking around. I don't see your kid around here. Okay, dude, what are you doing here?
Why are you here?
Yeah.
That's why.
I'm just watching this fun young team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. You do it elsewhere.
Yeah.
I have my rights. Not right here, you don't.
Nope.
Not right this moment.
Not near this
fist. You see a badge on my chest?
Yeah.
You think you're going to get some Miranda rights?
Nope.
No, sir.
Nope. Vigilante
you're gonna get
justice.
Escorted out of this park. Post haste.
If you say they're a fun young team one more time, oh, that's it, Schrager. Blammo! Boom! Oh, all right. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Boy, has Framber been checked for bipolar disorder? His behavior could be related.
Well, by virtue of the sports psychologist being so helpful for him, like, he clearly, you know, had some emotional challenges when it came to being a professional baseball player. So I'm not making light of being bipolar or anything, but he had sports bipolarity. In a sports venue, yes, he had athletes bipolarism? I don't know. He had athletes bipolarity.
Yeah,
and he was managing it well for a long time, but I don't know, not so much lately.
If this is it for Framber, like, let's say the rest of the season keeps going the way the last 6 weeks have gone,
mm-hmm.
is that, and he's not going to be back. I don't think he'd be back even if it went glorious for the next month and change. I think even if they win the World Series, I don't think Framber's coming back. What is his? I hate doing what is his legacy. I don't like legacy talk. But like, will he be more remembered for this rough patch at the end here, or the fact that he might be the most consistent pitcher of this golden age of Astros baseball?
I think that, boy, that's a tough one, man. I always give the average sports fan more credit than they demonstrate when it comes to forgetting the great.
We're not
great
talking
times.
About you if you're listening
No, but people tend to forget the awesome times real quickly once a guy's off the team. I think that the biggest thing, and I wonder about, you know, to not make light of this whatsoever, I wonder if maybe there's something going on in his personal life or something.
Maybe.
For him to regress this year the way it has, and maybe there's a really identifiable reason for it, and if he can figure that out, maybe there is some hope or some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
He's dug himself out of this state of mind before. It's just for whatever reason, he's having a hard time doing it this year.
Here's the thing, the biggest thing, they need him. They ain't going anywhere if they don't have the good version of Framber Valdez.
I'll tell you what, he's pitched on a really good baseball team for his entire career.
Yeah.
I don't know how many teams out there that might be willing to pay a lot for a pitcher, but maybe they're not a good team. Are they going to be interested in having him and seeing what it's like for him when things are really bad?
Would you?
No.
That's a great point. And places where the media is a little more
New York or someplace
than
like
it
that.
Is here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, like there tends to be a correlation with the salary level and the level of intensity of the media in a lot of places. So, Reggie Atitula, John Lopez, Crosstalk, brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. Hello, fellas.
Yo, do you guys think that there might be any correlation between the two sides of that, where you go the rough patch and depending on what's going on with his life and the idea that, hey, man, he is out here possibly frustrated at the fact that he's not gotten a contract and he has been that consistent pitcher, at least in a lot of our estimations, over the golden age of this Astros team?
Like the Astros haven't taken care of him and signed him to an extension?
Right.
I guarantee they've offered him an extension at some point along the way. Although I forget who said, might have been Dana Brown, earlier this season or maybe even in spring training, that there hadn't been talks with Framber's side in a long time. So, man, that's a distinct possibility. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, man, I'm grinding and I'm waiting for a $200 payday and I feel like I should have gotten this already and they're not even talking to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely – it's Framber. Who the hell knows?
Exactly.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
exactly.
Who the hell knows? That was an entertaining – toss yesterday between
thank you
the drive and in the loop.
I take no responsibility for that.
You were sitting there. You were that guy that was kind of poking the bear over there. I thought
that's right. It was good.
So you guys are. You know, you have. You get to get it from the back end and the front end when it comes to the toss. Like it's just a big toss salad.
I'm glad you said.
Yeah,
you
that's where it was going.
Did you say that?
And then you also have one with the afternoon show. So you kind of get a pulse for what's going on with all the shows on the station, other than you got to listen to the nighttime show.
Yeah. I feel dirty all of a sudden,
but you feel like a little bit of a whore,
a little bit more.
Yeah, but, not gonna lie, I get a little jealous when I hear you guys talking to the drive.
No, but Seth is right. We are in a good spot to kind of we see everyone.
Yeah,
you know, outside of the night show.
Yeah,
but we see them during. They get here a lot.
I was only listening. Was it getting legitimately chippy in here between you and Ron?
That's fun to me.
Yeah.
I was trying to make my point because I was a little confused by where he was coming from, but.
But it was the part where you declared that you were going to talk over him.
Yes.
That seemed like it had a little extra OG sauce.
That definitely changed the energy in the room.
Yeah.
I don't know if it did or not, but the reason was, you know, that's one of, we all have our little idiosyncrasies when it comes to stating our case or whatever. And I think that's one of shows. So I said, you know what? I'll play that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bitter.
No.
Yeah.
No, did you?
Yeah, but when you call that out, it did take it from a rousing, spirited conversation.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, okay. Okay, I'm sorry I'm not watching this on YouTube.
At least for YouTube. Me and Clint were just onlookers, bystanders at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Question of the day.
What's the easiest money you ever made? And this is based on Kawhi Leonard.
Boy, we have not hit the Kawhi story today.
Yeah.
That's
planting trees for the environment.
Yeah, carbon offsets. Don't get me started on that.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a company that Steve Ballmer himself funded, right?
Correct. $50 million.
He funded. He invested in it. There's like a couple of Harvard grads that had that kind of came up with the idea of trying to sell trees for
Kawhi's
carbon offsets.
Kawhi's sitting there going, cool.
So tell me if I get the summary right or not. For those of you who don't know the story, that Kawhi Leonard basically got shares in this company that Steve Ballmer was also an investor in, and it looks like salary cap or salary.
No. He won shares. It was legit, like checks for $7 million.
Checks. Yeah. Checks.
As an endorsement.
Yeah. As an endorser, right. Who and it looks like nothing. A way to skirt the luxury tax.
Yeah, because he didn't do anything. There were no show jobs, basically.
Yeah.
Watching this. Like Brett Favre for his appearances that he got paid for. In Alabama, right?
Yeah,
or wherever he was.
Like the old school SMU watched the automatic sprinklers come on.
Right, yeah. And so this company went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So all the documents are out there because that's all bankruptcy is all public. Mm. And Pablo Torre, who's made a cottage industry now of getting documents either sent to him or getting tips on them or whatever, exposed this. And now Ballmer and the Clippers are in vehement denial. Mark Cuban's coming in and backing up his billionaire buddy.
And Pablo goes, "Hey, I'll talk to you.
Yeah, I'll talk to you. Come on my podcast. I got
stuff.
Cuban, I got some for you too."
Which that was how I took it. It wasn't just like, "Well, let's have a rousing debate." Sure. He's like, "Oh, walk into this bear trap, please."
He literally said, "I got a lot of questions for you," to Mark Cuban. You know what?
Well, like, why would you sell your team to Miriam Adelson?
Yes,
I saw Brett Coleman yesterday, who's a very successful YouTuber, but also a Texans fan. He kind of came in out of nowhere and said, you know, you got to wonder about some of these quarterbacks who have taken these, played at a huge discount for all these years. And
is that a certain Thomas Edward Patrick?
Yeah. Start looking into old TB12 there.
Yes. Yeah. So what's the easiest money you ever made?
Easiest money. Okay, I'll tell you just that I'd have to think about it.
Not the laundry.
This has never been easy money for me, John. I put in the work. No, I'll tell you the easiest money that I've found recently. It's not a lot of money, but I've changed zero about my behavior, and I get money that shows up in my bank account every 2 weeks. I've monetized my Twitter account.
Oh, really?
I've monetized. I clicked the monetization thing. It's actually, Seth pointed this out to me several months ago. It took me several months of procrastination to finally go, all right, I'm going to click this monetization button. And you need to be tweeting at a certain level and have X amount of followers and have a blue check mark and all those things. Mm-hmm. But I get, you know, I'm getting, like, every few weeks, I'm getting $50-$60
some beer money
before you go.
And I've changed zero.
You're doing what you were,
I was doing it
exactly
anyways.
What you were doing before.
Yeah,
right?
Pendlepole's still a little dirty
change,
now.
Yeah. Zero change in my behavior on there.
My first, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you.
I hated it. I got a job at the controller's office in college, and it was not a well-managed office, and basically, they were telling me to slow down and not work. I was basically filing stuff and everything, working in the back room. And they're like, "Hey, Seth, you know, you're getting stuff done too fast, and we don't want to share you with the other departments because we have to give you this many hours. It's like a student work job." Mm-hmm. And so I would just sit in this file room doing nothing, like being allowed to just read or do whatever I wanted. We didn't have smartphones or anything, but like I hated it. I just... because they were paying me and I wasn't doing any actual work for like 6 out of 8 hours in a day. And I hated it. I felt so guilty the entire time. It was awful.
Honestly, though, that sounds boring as hell. You getting paid for the boredom, you shouldn't feel bad about that. If you're just,
I know, but I was taking summer classes. I came and did my homework and everything. Yeah. And I just felt so weird the entire time.
Yeah.
But it was, it was almost like a no-show job.
You would not have cut it in a Power 5 conference back in the day.
The guilt
your conscience of just a bag of money getting dropped on your desk. Yeah.
Bringing the Dodge Charger the back to the facility. And everything. Yeah.
I had a summer job once monitoring a drop-off bin at a dry cleaner's. There were no cleaning machines. It was like the second store for this person. So it was just like a storefront, and it was those big bins, you know, those big laundry bins.
Yeah.
So people would open the thing outside, drop their clothes in, and when that bin was full, I put another bin under it.
That's it.
8 hours a day.
8 hours a day.
I had people over, you know, just chatting. We were listening to music. You know, I had girls over. I literally just watching a bin get full.
How many times did you have to change it?
Maybe twice.
A day?
Yeah.
And you're getting paid for 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good gig. That's a good gig. Oh, man. All right. Well, fellas, we will. By the way, you're listening to KLT, AM KLT, FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey sports station. Kind of got it in under the wire there. All right, Seth, antibodies to you. Football Friday tomorrow. Let's go. Let's go.
All right, let's do this. Antibodies, yes, and enjoy your time on whatever streaming service you're watching tonight.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's on NBC.
NBC.
Okay,
yeah.
But you can go to Peacock if you really want
If you want to stream and say, no, I stream all my games, you can go to Peacock, yeah. All right, we're done. We're out of time.